One of the most detailed records of daily life along Louisiana's Cane River was told through the paintings of a self-taught folk artist who lived on Melrose Plantation near Natchitoches. A trio of suspects took advantage of her works, creating and selling forgeries of her paintings for close to 40 years, until the FBI moved in to investigate a case unlike it had ever investigated. This is the story of legendary folk artist Clementine Hunter and the FBI's first folk art forgery file. This is Southern Mysteries.
It's gonna be all right. These ain't dark or troubled times. It's a day like any other day. You got a dark and troubled mind, all right. You hold that baby tight, and I swear if you can hear me, then everything gonna be just fine. All right. All right.
Welcome to Southern Mysteries, exploring historical mysteries and legendary figures of the American South. I'm your host, Shannon Ballard. Natchitoches is the original French colony in Louisiana, the oldest settlement in the Louisiana Purchase. Established in 1714, Natchitoches draws tourists from around the world who usually want to experience three things: the Still Magnolias filming locations that are all around the parish, the world-famous Natchitoches Christmas Festival, known as the City of Lights, and the Cane River National Heritage Area. Along this trail, you can explore plantations along Cane River Road, including Melrose Plantation, the home of Louisiana's most beloved folk artist, Clementine Hunter. Clementine Hunter was born on Hidden Hill Plantation around 1886. Hidden Hill was known as a harsh place to live and work. Some of the locals say it was the inspiration for Harriet Beecher Stowe's Uncle Tom's Cabin. At the age of 15, Clementine Hunter's father moved the family to Melrose Plantation, just south of Natchitoches, Louisiana, where he was able to transition from sharecropping at Hidden Hill to tenant farming at Melrose. His labor there meant a better status when it came to income for his family. Clementine had the opportunity to go to school, obtain her education, and her parents encouraged her to do so, but she hated school. Kept going, then just running home halfway through the day. Her parents finally decided they would no longer push her to pursue an education and allowed her to begin picking cotton to earn money. Melrose Plantation played a key role in the life of Clementine and her family. To understand her, you have to understand Melrose, the woman who bore the sons that would establish the plantation and the woman who would turn Melrose Plantation into a haven for artists. Melrose Plantation was founded by descendants of Marie-Thérèse Coincoin. Marie-Thérèse Coincoin was born into slavery around 1742, born into the household of the founder of Natchitoches, Louisiana. After the death of her owner, Marie-Thérèse Coincoin was leased out to a young French-born merchant and local militiaman named Claude Thomas Pierre Matoire. Matoire and Coincoin fell in love, and in time wanted to marry, but they were unable to obtain permission from the Catholic Church because Coincoin was a slave. In 1776, a priest attempted to end the relationship between the two when he filed charges that would have led to Coincoin being sold to plantation owners near New Orleans. That pushed Pierre Matoire to make a choice, and he chose to work with Coincoin's owners. Matoire purchased Coincoin and was able to manumit her, meaning he legally freed her from slavery. Together, Matoire and Coincoin had 10 children. Their relationship came to an end shortly before he married the widow of a close friend in 1788. Over time, Matoire freed all of the enslaved children resulting from his relationship with Marie-Thérèse, and he provided for Marie-Thérèse a yearly stipend and acknowledged her a parcel of land near his own plantation. She would be solely responsible for the success or the failure of the land. Marie-Thérèse Coincoin and the children she bore from her relationship with Pierre Matoire would, in time, establish a historical community of Creoles of color along Louisiana's Cane River, known as Isle Breville. Residents of Isle Breville succeeded as business people, plantation owners, and yes, many of these people of color were also slave owners. Marie Therese cultivated a tobacco crop on her small plantation. By 1972, she had enough product to ship to New Orleans. Despite being a woman who had been freed from slavery as a plantation owner in Louisiana in the late 18th century, Marie Therese Coincoin owned slaves. It's estimated that Coincoin and her descendants owned at least 200 slaves in Natchitoches, accounting for 8% of slaves in the parish. Stephen Niven wrote of Coincoin and her choice to own and purchase slaves in a feature on her life in The Root in March of 2015, writing, "Coincoin was unable to purchase the freedom of all of her children and grandchildren. And so, perhaps because of an ongoing desire to complete that goal, she began to buy slaves to work the land she owned. The logic of a slave society and economy perhaps required it. How else could she earn the capital she needed? But she must have also been painfully aware that to secure her own children's liberty, she would have to deny freedom to the children of others. Coincoin had negotiated the difficult transition from slavery to freedom, and she perhaps justified her actions by believing that her own slaves might do likewise." In 1796, one of Coincoin's sons, Louis Matoir, was deeded over 900 acres of land that would, in time, become one of the Cane River's most prominent plantations. For generations, from 1797 until 1847, this land would be owned by the Matoir family. The home passed from owner to owner until 1884, when the plantation was purchased for John Hampton Henry, a gift from his wealthy father to celebrate his son's 21st birthday. John and his wife, Cammie, would raise their 8 children on what the family named Melrose Plantation. When John Hampton Henry died in 1918, his 46-year-old widow, Cammie, decided she wanted to do something special with Melrose. She didn't care about operating a plantation. She let other people head up that operation. She wanted Melrose to be a place where new ideas and creations would be born. Miss Cammie, as she became known, made Melrose a haven for artists and writers. She converted buildings around the plantation into studio spaces. And soon, word spread that Melrose wasn't an artist colony as much as it was a haven and a getaway for artists, especially for those around New Orleans. Writers and artists would come to Melrose and remain on site for months at a time. Miss Cammie hosted many of the most prominent figures of the Southern Renaissance: William Faulkner, Rachel Field, Ada Jack Carver, Rourke Bradford, and Alberta Kinsey. Brushes and discarded tubes of paint left at Melrose by artist Alberta Kinsey would change the course of one Melrose employee's life and give the world the gift of the folk art of Clementine Hunter. When Miss Cammie was working hard to bring artists to Melrose and support their work, she had no idea that one of her employees had a gift that needed to be encouraged and supported. In 1939, Alberta Kinsey once again visited Melrose. When she returned home to New Orleans, she left behind discarded tubes of paint. Clementine Hunter had worked for years in the fields of Melrose, picking cotton and pecans, and had transitioned to working as a cook at Melrose Plantation. Legend says Clementine found the discarded tubes of paint from Alberta Kinsey and used the paint to, as she referred to it, mark a picture on a window shade. Inside her little cabin on the grounds of Melrose, Clementine Hunter continued to create her marked pictures, using discarded items as her canvas: window shades, cardboard boxes, jugs, gourds, and bottles, anything she could find and use, Clementine Hunter marked pictures on it. These marked pictures were vivid scenes of plantation life, vivid, colorful scenes that depicted the harsh reality of life for Black Americans in the segregated South. Clementine Hunter painted what she knew, what she had seen and done while working on plantations, picking cotton, gathering pecans, washing clothes, and she painted the joys and sorrow of life, from baptisms and weddings to funeral scenes. To Clementine, she was just marking pictures that reflected the life and people along the Cane River. Cammie Henry encouraged Clementine to continue painting, but it was an eccentric writer and a longtime guest of Melrose who really changed Clementine Hunter's life. Francois Mignon planned a six-week visit to Melrose Plantation in the early 1940s. He stayed 6 weeks, loved it so much, he decided to stay on for another 32 years. Mignon would become the plantation curator, and he encouraged Clementine Hunter's talent by showing her how people would respond to her work. One day, he took her paintings to a local drugstore to sell them for a dollar. They sold quickly, and people wanted to see more of her work. Clementine continued to mark more pictures, and in time displayed her work in the Melrose cabin. She had never learned to read or write, so it took an artist friend nudging her that she needed to sign or initial her paintings to get her to learn how to leave her mark on her paintings. She initially learned how to sign her initials, CH, but over time she switched it up. She began signing her initials in reverse. She wanted to make sure no one thought her marked pictures were created by another CH at Melrose, Cammie Henry. Early on, Clementine Hunter allowed people to enter her cabin and look at her marked pictures if they paid her 25 cents. As the years passed, that price would increase to 50 cents to look. Clementine Hunter would remain near or close to poverty for the remainder of her life. But during her lifetime, her marked pictures would open doors the self-taught artist could never have imagined. U.S. President Jimmy Carter invited her to the White House, but Clementine Hunter never traveled far from Natchitoches Parish, refused to. Her response to President Carter's invitation was a polite thanks, but no thanks. She didn't want to travel outside of Louisiana. Instead, if a president wanted to meet her, he was more than welcome to come see her at her place. Clementine was just down to earth. She was real, and that spirit is reflected in her art. Clementine Hunter was in her 50s when she marked her first picture. We have no definitive number of the paintings she produced, but it's estimated that she marked between 5 to 8,000 pictures from the time she began painting in the 1930s until she died in 1988 at the age of 101. Her final works being painted in a simple trailer she purchased and had settled at the end of a dirt road just up the river from Melrose Plantation. Clementine Hunter remains one of Louisiana's most famous folk artists. You can see many of her paintings that are still on display at Melrose Plantation. Many of Clementine's works hang in museums across the country, are still featured in exhibitions of American folk art. Collectors go crazy for a Clementine Hunter original, paying about $1,000 for her smaller works, these days paying around $10,000 to $12,000 for her larger works. Some collectors have even purchased what they believe to be original Clementine Hunters, only to learn that they were a victim of one of the dirtiest crimes in the world of art, forgery. Starting in 1974, more and more victims started coming forward, reporting to art dealers and to the FBI that they had been duped, sold a fake Clementine Hunter work. And one name was a common thread that would run throughout the reports of forgery for decades, William Toy, or as Garden and Gun magazine once referred to him, the talented Mr. Toy. 77-year-old William Toy and his 67-year-old wife, Beryl Ann Toy, were living on Kitty Drive in Baton Rouge when on September 30th, 2009, the FBI raided their home. The Federal Bureau of Investigation executed a search warrant that day that was based on probable cause that William and Beryl Toy had sold about $100,000 worth of fake Clementine Hunter paintings. FBI records claim the couple worked with New Orleans antiques dealer Robert Lucky Jr. and, quote, engaged in a conspiracy and a scheme to defraud several victims in Louisiana and in other states, and knowingly sold forgeries as original, authentic works of art by Clementine Hunter. For 5 hours, agents were on scene searching the Toys' home, and by the time they left, they had seized paintings, art supplies, letters, computers, and typewriters. FBI Special Agent Randy Deaton worked the case and often speaks about the importance of Hunter's arts and this investigation. Deaton has recounted that suspicion around Mr. Toy's talents in the world of art forgery could be traced over the course of four decades preceding the raid at Toy's home in 2009. As early as 1974, William Toy was arrested on 22 counts of forgery for making and selling Clementine Hunter paintings. The case was never prosecuted. Victims didn't get justice. In 1996, the names of William and Beryl Toy appeared again when they consigned paintings to the Louisiana Auction Exchange. A number of the works listed for auction, including a Degas and Matisse, were revealed to be forgeries. William Toy, who was listed in the Auction Exchange catalog under his often preferred alias of Dr. Jeffrey Toy, tried to flip the story. The Toys sued their own attorney for returning forgeries to them, even though they had been forged by Toy. For decades, local and federal authorities weren't too interested in pursuing this white-collar crime in the art world. Victims were understandably frustrated, but authorities didn't have strong evidence against the Toys until 2008, when FBI agents, including Special Agent Deaton, were called to the federal prosecutor's office in Shreveport, Louisiana, and told that they would be heading up the investigation into art forgery. The three targets of the investigation, William Toy, Beryl Toy, and Robert Lucky Jr. Those FBI agents started investigating and questioning a limited number of people, carefully choosing those that they knew would keep quiet about the questions, not tip off Toy that the FBI was on to him. Investigators learned that one of the victims had made a move in 2005 that would prove helpful in the case against Toy. The collector had funded the purchase of two originals from Clementine Hunter and two forgeries from Robert Lucky Jr. The collector paid to have all four paintings analyzed at a private lab. The collector wanted a record of the earmarks of the forgery for comparison with Clementine Hunter originals. This was key evidence in the case. Interview after interview, FBI agents learned more and more about the operation the Toys and Robert Lucky Jr. seemed to have perfected beginning in the late 1990s. When Robert Lucky met with or communicated with a potential buyer, he never named the Toys as sellers. He would usually come up with a sad story of a widow who had to sell her art collection after the death of a beloved husband, and she just happened to have Clementine Hunter's works. Lucky, with the backing of the Toys, would play on the emotions of the people he worked with and would finalize the sell. He was said to have created fake bills of sale and documents to prove the authenticity of the paintings, claiming that Beryl Toy had purchased the paintings directly from Clementine Hunter in the 1960s and 1970s. This would seal the deal. Forgery sold. Victim duped. In the late 1990s and early 2000s, collectors and dealers began to notice that some of the reverse CH initials on the Clementine Hunter paintings just didn't look quite right. And time after time, as the FBI interviewed collectors and art gallery owners who had reported being a victim or suspected something wasn't quite right with the paintings Robert Lucky was trying to move through the art world, well, they expressed their own disappointment and frustration, their financial loss. But they also focused on the victim of these crimes that seems overshadowed when the story of Toy's talent and skill for forgery is told. Clementine Hunter. This black woman, who had survived harsh working conditions on plantations in Louisiana, had found a voice to tell the story of her life when she was in her 50s. This woman, who had sold entrance to her home for 50 cents to earn extra money while she walked this earth, was the victim of two men and a woman who were selling Clementine Hunter forgeries for thousands of dollars. Her life's work and her legacy were being tainted by those forgeries. Putting an end to the Clementine Hunter forgeries and preserving her legacy were part of the FBI's mission when they entered the Toy's home in September of 2009. FBI Special Agent Deaton has shared the account from his perspective. Mrs. Toy was the one who answered the door on the day the FBI raided the home. She called for William Toy. As agents entered to execute their search warrant, they found the house to be an utter and complete mess. The house wasn't kept. There were 18 cats inside with buckets of used litter and waste throughout the house. As Deaton put it, cat hair, cat waste, cats everywhere. Agents found stack after stack of paintings, art dealer catalogs, and contact information. Art books and used paint in just about every room of that house. cheap school-grade paints. In the backyard, they found hardboard that some of the Clementine Hunter forgeries had been painted on. And the agents also found a digital camera and 16 memory cards that featured picture after picture of the toys' cats. To say they were obsessed with those cats is an understatement. Toya would later tell Garden & Gun magazine that there were at least 60 cats buried in their backyard in small cat coffins he had built for each one of them when they passed. Well, along with pictures of the cats on those memory cards, there were also pictures of Mr. Toy creating his works of art, his forgeries, with his cats literally sitting on him. Special Agent Deaton reported that the FBI got two confessions from William Toy that day, conflicting confessions, because he first said that his wife, Beryl, had created all the forgeries and he helped her sell them. And then he said he created the forgeries and his wife helped him sell them. In all, the FBI was able to piece together their case against the Toys and Robert Luckey Jr. based on a lot of evidence that had been seized from their home on the day of the raid. William Toy had created a spiral-bound notebook called Overview of Clementine Hunter Collection, including 60 photos and descriptions of these 60 paintings the Toys held in their collection. All the photographed paintings that were included in Toy's book were forgeries. William and Beryl Toy had also filed bankruptcy three times. As Special Agent Deaton will remind you today, when you file, you have to list your life, all your assets. If you lie, you're giving false information to bankruptcy court. It's a crime. The Toys had claimed that they had been collecting Clementine Hunter works for decades, but their bankruptcy paperwork only listed personal effects, art supplies, furniture, and clothing. They never mentioned the expansive art collection they had told people they had amassed over the years. The FBI continued their interviews with victims and learned that a woman who had purchased a Clementine Hunter piece from Robert Luckey Jr. had learned it was fake, hired an attorney to get her money back from Luckey. But to get her money back, she had to make a deal with Luckey to return the fake painting to him. She agreed, but pulled a trick on Luckey. She put her own initials and date on the back of the painting in case it was ever resold. And the painting was resold. During the course of the FBI's investigation, an agent found that painting with one of the victims, turned the painting over, expecting to see the woman's signature and initials on the back. Instead, the agent found a large mark made with a modern permanent marker to strike out the woman's name and initials. Marking out the signature and initials of that woman who was trying to ensure the painting was never resold to another victim, well, that was criminal intent. In February of 2010, a federal jury indicted 78-year-old William Toy, 68-year-old Beryl Toy, and 62-year-old Robert Luckey Jr. for selling counterfeit Clementine Hunter paintings. The four-count indictment charged all three defendants with mail fraud and conspiracy to commit mail fraud. Now, the FBI wanted to make sure they had a solid case when they went to trial. The FBI would work with five different labs to analyze Clementine Hunter paintings and paintings seized in the raid of the Toys' home and seized from victims who had purchased what they believed to be forgeries. All of the forgeries were consistent with two things. First, dirt that wasn't from the locations Clementine Hunter was known to paint. And yes, samples were taken from Melrose Plantation. And second, the forgeries featured added flair, cat hair. A common method of art forgery is to use dirt to try to artificially age paintings. And as to the cat hair, well, that wasn't intentional. It was just bound to happen when you're painting fake works of art with one of your 18 cats hanging out on your shoulder. It's not the kind of environment Clementine Hunter had around her when she painted, but it was the environment the talented Mr. Toy loved to have around him when he was painting. The FBI had a solid case, but in the end, all three defendants would agree to a plea deal. William Toy pleaded guilty to avoid prison time. He acknowledged he had sold fake Clementine Hunter paintings and painted them as well. Toy's plea deal led to a sentence of 2 years supervised release, restitution of $400,000, and his cooperation in future investigations into Clementine Hunter forgeries. Beryl Toy pleaded guilty and received 2 years probation. Robert Luckey Jr. would also take a deal, pleading guilty. He was sentenced to 25 months in jail, 3 years supervised release after he was released from jail, and $300,000 restitution for victims. By the time the toys and Robert Lucky Jr. were sentenced, it was clear they didn't have the money for restitution. They sold countless forged paintings and ended up with just about nothing. That left everyone wondering where on earth that money went. But we'll never know. In an interview with Special Agent Deaton, published in Country Roads magazine in December of 2018, Deaton shared that Robert Lucky Jr. served his prison time. He died in 2017. William Toy lived out his life in an assisted living home with his wife, Beryl. Toy died in early 2018 and is said to be buried in a pauper's grave near Zachary, Louisiana. And Beryl Toy was last known to be living in a Baton Rouge, Louisiana nursing home. William Toy once told a reporter that the only thing a Clementine Hunter was good for was as a stepping stone in a muddy field. Clearly, the man didn't forge her works out of respect or admiration for one of the most beloved Louisiana folk artists of all time. Theory goes he targeted her works because it was simple. The cost of having an expert analyze the art would be more than what people paid for folk art. That's why Toy felt he could be successful at folk art forgery. But in doing so, Toy led to the FBI doing something the Bureau had never done before, investigating a folk art forgery case, rather than fine art, which had been their standard forgery cases for decades. Special Agent Randy Deaton shared that the former director of the American Folk Art Museum told the FBI that this investigation helped to legitimize folk art because it became a form of art the U.S. government was willing to spend money and manpower on, just as they had done with fine art. Ultimately, protecting Clementine Hunter and her legacy. Southern Mysteries is hosted and produced by me, Shannon Ballard. Clementine Hunter's marked pictures are vivid and a must experience in person. It's worth a trip to Louisiana to walk the ground of Melrose Plantation where Clementine painted for so many years and view Clementine Hunter's murals. Her work continues to be exhibited in museums across the country and even around the world. A few years ago, there was an exhibit of Clementine Hunter's work at the Louvre in Paris. A mini exhibition of Hunter's work was displayed at the Smithsonian's National Museum of African American History and Culture in Washington, D.C. And major American museums are planning Clementine Hunter exhibits over the next few years. Hopefully you'll have a chance to see her work in person someday. You can learn more about Clementine Hunter, see photos of her at work, and see photos of her work in the detailed show notes for this episode at southernmysteries.com. And remember, it's always free to subscribe to Southern Mysteries, so make sure you do that. Subscribe so new episodes always appear in your player of choice. I hope you'll join me in making that player of choice the Radio Public app. Listening to Southern Mysteries on that app is how you can support the show. When you listen, I get paid. And it's a great way to discover new shows thanks to podcast curators with Radio Public who are constantly creating new lists of suggested podcasts based on the shows you like to listen to, like Southern Mysteries. You can download the Radio Public app for free on iOS or Android. Thanks so much for listening.